This is National Inventors Day. So this is great timing to have this conversation with Jeff Johnson, who has authored MN Invents, Minnesota Invents. It's just a neat opportunity here. He joins me this morning to talk about Minnesota Invents. Jeff, good morning. Welcome to the radio here on WCCO. How you doing, sir?
Good morning, John. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. What an honor.
Well, we'll see. Hey, I have enjoyed. I know there are some beautiful posters that are up that depict some of these things invented in Minnesota. And these are all connected. Is Replace, is that the publisher of the book?
Correct. Yeah, we're a design company here in Minneapolis. We've been in business 20 years. We do a lot of work in the inventive community. And we're the publisher and author of Minnesota Invents.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of these inventions, if we can. What's the one that is most, I think, startling to you, that was a surprise for you to learn when you were going through this and starting to dig around a little bit?
Oh, that's such a hard question. Like, it's a secret history of Minnesota invention. And as soon as you dig into this incredible labyrinth of invention, you find out the pop-up toaster was invented here and the retractable seatbelt. Probably the biggest surprise for me, John, was learning that the first stored data computer, the UNIVAC, that changed the face of the planet, was invented here, right in St. Paul, in an abandoned aircraft glider plant. And the first supercomputer, the Cray supercomputer, was invented here. But really, it is such an unending wealth of information that we felt it deserved not one book, but a whole series of books.
So how will the series play out? Are all these posters that I'm looking at, when I look at the website here for, it's a great website, folks, if you get a chance, mninvents.com. As a matter of fact, I'll link it to my Facebook page so people can have a shortcut way to find all of this. But are there more to this in terms of Minnesota Invents than just what I'm seeing on this poster page?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, that we started this process sort of organically 3 years ago. The project started when I was a scout leader here in Minneapolis. Yo, go Pack One. We had a history component that was necessary for the scouts, and history is boring to an eight-year-old unless you do something fun. So I would take my Cub Scouts, down to the Stone Arch Bridge, and I would just point around the city and say, hey, that's where Oregon Trail was invented, and that's where the first concrete grain elevator was invented, and that's where magnetic poetry was invented. And the kids would just light up. I mean, when you tell a kid that the pop-up toaster was invented here and that the first deep-sea submarine was invented here.
Oh, yeah, pause right there for a minute, Jeff. Pause right there, because that was a stunner to me when I was looking at this story, that General Mills, General Mills and Alvin go back to 1964, right?
Yeah, it makes no sense. 1962, actually.
Okay.
These are people that make, Cheerios and Bisquick, and they're awesome. But during World War II, there was a lot of naval production in Minneapolis because they needed to make naval material anywhere they could make it. And part of that engineering led into the creation of the first deep-sea submarine. Now, ironically, we are 2,000 miles from any ocean, and the water that is here is frozen half the year. But this is the machine that discovered the Titanic. And this is the machine that they used to discover Broken Arrow, the missing nuclear missiles at the bottom of the ocean. This is a globally affecting invention, and it was made right here in the middle of the prairie.
Yeah, ALVIN is what it's called. I'm sure that's an acronym for something, right?
Mm-hmm.
A manned deep ocean submarine, and has made 4,400 deep sea dives, including, as you mentioned, the exploration of the wreckage of the Titanic. Just now, that was one that it just came, especially the connection to General Mills. As you said, I'm used to Betty Crocker and Cheerios on my high chair tray. And that was one that I was surprised at. Here's another one, though, that I knew the origins had to be here, but I was surprised to learn specifically where they were, because we're talking about the Skyway. And for many of us, because there's a multiple number of skyways in downtown Minneapolis. You can go, cover miles in downtown Minneapolis without having to go outside. And they're going to extend that all the way over to U.S. Bank Stadium. But the skyway itself originated, the world's first modern skyway system, was in downtown St. Paul.
Downtown St. Paul at the First Bank Building with the big number one. And it was actually quite high, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it was on the 17th floor of the Merchants Bank Building. And it was the first time that anyone had thought, well, maybe we can have a trail of these skyscrapers together and we don't have to walk outside. So, the very first skyway was 17 stories into the air. That was taken down and then brought down to the second floor. But yeah, of course the Skyway was invented here because it's cold here.
It was on the 17th floor?
Yeah, it was on the 17th floor. It was way up high. It was a ridiculously large, like a really high point. But it worked. So that was, you know, like the history of most inventions is that great first failure. And then you get through that great first failure, and then it's a really awesome idea.
Well, and
that's a pure Minnesota thing, is the ability and interest in failing and then failing great. Like, I think that's a really unique Minnesota trait.
Failing great. I like that.
Yeah.
Jeff Johnson is my guest, and you can see this this book. Again, as I said, I'll put it on my Facebook page in just a moment here. Facebook.com/Heinz Show, HINESSHOW. But looking at this, MN Invents, you mentioned the cold weather, and if so, of course the Skyway came from here. But to that as well, so did and I think this gets disputed sometimes, Jeff, but you've got the last word on it here. So did the first indoor shopping center, that being Southdale, back in 1956.
Yeah, we claim that as our own. That is definitely ours. The first indoor climate-controlled shopping center. So people have been shopping since we first walked out of caves and wanted to buy something. But the Southdale Shopping Center was the first time you put everything inside and you had all the climate control internally. And it changed the nature of retail forever. And it's still here. It's still in business. It's still around.
It's had its share of facelifts over the years.
Now,
wait, how many books will there be in all? I mean, how many books are there? I'm only familiar with the images that are from this that were sent to me here online. I have not had a chance to get my hands on a copy of MN Invents.
Ooh, well, I will fix that, John.
Fix that.
We have three books in the pipeline. One is published now, so that'll be available for sale on Amazon.com on March 10th. Tonight is our launch party in celebration of National Inventors Day at the Solar Arts Building at 6 p.m. over in Northeast. There's three books, one this year, one in 2017, and another in 2018.
Oh, cool.
But frankly, I think I could do 100 books. It just never ends. We could do 10 books just on tape.
Well, that's true. Tape. That's true. Yes. All the variations of tape, for goodness sakes. You know, yeah. And here's one that comes up from time to time because, you know, Minnesota takes the cake for so many inventions, and people sometimes get the origins incorrect because I think a lot of people have tried to tell me that the former field goal kicker Fred Cox invented Nerf, but that is not really the truth.
That is not the case.
No, he may have been active in Pop Warner football or something like that, but
Nerf was invented by the great Rain Geyer. He is outstanding, and he invented this game as an indoor volleyball game that he thought would be great for the elderly and for children. He sold it to Barker Brothers, and they just took one look at the Nerf ball itself and said, "We're doing that." So Nerf was invented here by the great Rain Geyer, and actually he's been really an awesome resource for the book. Like, he's been really accessible and has been wonderful to talk to.
Yeah, and of course the Nerf started out with the ball and then became so many things after that and along the way, so it's without a doubt. That was great. I mean, because there's all the Nerf guns and all the other variations of Nerf. You mentioned the pop-up toaster. That was one I think that I knew, or I read it somewhere some time ago. Were there a series? You mentioned Rain Geyer. Did he invent a number of things?
Oh, Rain Geyer is just the amazing wellspring of awesome material. Rain Geyer is also great for inventing, if I'm not mistaken, he's also behind Cooties. I think he invented Cooties.
What's that? Cooties, the game, yes.
And I have to double-check myself on this. He's invented so many things. He may have also been responsible for Twister.
I think Twister was, that was actually the collaborators, Charles Foley and Neil Rabens, according to MN Invents, which is a good source.
Well, that's a great website. Looks like three. Rain Geyer.
Oh, that's right. Rain Geyer's there as well. You're right.
All three of them. You know, and when you tell these things to kids, I'm telling you, John, when we first did this with my scout troop, it then led to me making these posters for my kids' science group. As soon as you tell kids that Nerf was invented here in Minnesota, there's four things that happen. They get empowered, they get surprised, they get delighted, and then they just start inventing. Like, kids are naturally inventive. As soon as you say, hey, the pop-up toaster was invented here, I think they get really demystified. It's like, oh, I guess there's something called an inventor, and they live here. And it's a really wonderful process to see happen. Jeff, that led to us showing the work at the University of Minnesota, which they've been great partners, and at St. Cloud State University. And it's just been a wonderful experience to see. I would say the book is really tailored for kids and people who think like kids.
Well, and Jeff, I get the impression you do as well. Jeff, hang on the line with me for a second, though. Have you got a couple more minutes?
I want to talk
about
all day.
And I want to recap, and I want to recap the information, too, about the rollout party tonight. So we'll do all of that before we're done. I'm talking with Jeff Johnson, who, along with the team at Replace, has authored the book MN Invents. It's just a great story. Volume 1 is coming out, and we'll talk some more about that coming up on WCCO. Hey, good morning once again. Tonight is the rollout for MN Invents, the first of a series of books taking a look at the great things invented in Minnesota, all things great. Jeff Johnson is my guest. He is among those who put this all together, and we're talking about this. You know, another one that was a surprise, I know that we had a couple of very large bag companies here.
Yes, we did. Yes,
and I think it was a Bemis Bag Company. That's one that comes to mind. They made grocery bags.
That's one of them.
Yep. But the idea of putting handles on grocery bags also came here. Came from here.
It's amazing. The handled grocery bag was invented and developed by a St. Paul grocer, and he was outstanding. And you take for granted that these things that we touch every day, like there's a great forward in the book from the developer of Magnetic Poetry, Dave Capel. You could stand in any room in the world and look around, and you're going to find something that was invented in Minnesota. So Walter Dubner, he was the developer of the handled grocery bag in St. Paul in 1912, and he was just a grocer who got impatient of his bags not being able to be carried away easily, and he developed the technique of putting handles on a grocery bag.
Yeah. Also, sometimes not all that securely these days.
No.
No, I'm teasing. It is a great idea. It is a great. It is just really a great idea.
And John, it's just the city of and the state, the cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul specifically, but the state of Minnesota are filled with these people. Whether we're talking about deep sea submarines, pop up toasters, water skis, masking tape, mass spectrometers, microwave popcorn, for gosh sakes. The Breathe Right strip, magnetic recording tape, satellite TV broadcasting was developed here. It is a very odd place. Like, this is not a huge state. It's a great state, but it's not a huge population state. The amount of innovation that comes out of here is so disproportionate. And it's kind of so secret that we just felt we had to do a book or do a series of books talking about how great and unique we are. And I think Minnesotans are guilty of just not bragging like we should.
So you're doing it for us with these books. You know, here's one that was a surprise to me. I mean, I'm very familiar with Tonka trucks, okay? Tonka toys, Tonka trucks, the original metal trucks especially. I had one as a kid, you know, with a hydraulic dump on it and the whole thing. But I did not know that it started out as a garden tool manufacturing company.
Yes, sir. Yeah, the Mound Metalcraft Company originally manufactured steel garden implements. And that eventually led to them starting to make toys, and they made this amazing product that everybody loves. And, I get teary thinking about Tonka trucks because I remember loving them so much. And my two boys, who are now 11 and 12, they grew up on Tonka trucks and then just wrapped up in so much emotion that it's just an awesome, great thing.
Yeah.
And the list is so large and so long that I'm certainly never going to do it justice in one book or even 10 books. But there's just so many awesome things that came out of here that I just felt like we have to talk more about them.
See, and I knew Scott. I did not know Brennan, but I knew Scott Olson. And I was very familiar with what Scott Olson had done. As a matter of fact, I had Scott Olson's original product, rollerblades. And then he came back with a couple of other things called Switch-Its, I think, for those guys who wanted to switch out their hockey skates with an inline skate blade. So you could just flip them back and forth like that. But, it was quite a great idea.
Yeah, those guys are just perfect innovators. And I feel like there's a little innovation and invention. Real innovation is, working really hard on that one little special thing. But invention is like rollerblades, where you find things around you, you put it together, and look, this is awesome. 3M face masks, the white mask that we all...
Sure, filter masks, yeah.
Yeah, filter masks. That started because guys in the plant were taking their wife's bras and cutting them in half and using half of the bra as a mask. That's where that first began. And that's invention. That's invention.
And some of these, as you mentioned, go back a number of years. The toaster idea goes back to 1919, the pop-up toaster. But then there's also some very recent, like the poster that goes with it is one of these great throwback-looking posters, but it is the mind-controlled helicopter.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. I mean, again, we're doing 3 books right now, but we could do 300 books. We could do 100 books just on University of Minnesota. So, yeah, that was 2013. That was an amazing team that put together under the tutelage of one great professor, Professor Bin He. They found a way of putting a helmet with sensors on it, and just using your mind, not anything else, just your mind, you were able to direct a quadcopter through a series of really complex locations, and you could fly this quadcopter just with your mind. And that was just 3 years ago.
And that's the brain-computer interface.
Correct. Yeah, correct.
That looks like it could have some really weird intentions on the other side with the brain-computer interface. There's so much there. Hey, Jeff, I'm running off the clock here, so I want to – let's remind everybody, if they would like to come and learn more about this, take a little pride in Minnesota. Come up to Northeast Minneapolis. What did you say it was? 7-Eleven 13th?
7-Eleven 15th Avenue Northeast.
15th.
Solar Arts Building owned by my wonderful friends, Chowgirls, who are innovators of their own right in Minnesota. 6 p.m. tonight, 6 to 10. Come on out. There'll be food and drink from Chowgirls, and it's open to the public. So come on out.
Well, great. And again, a chance to roll out this book, this first book, MN Invents, from Replace, the publishers. And Jeff Johnson, thank you so much for joining me this morning here on WCCO. I look forward to we'll have to talk about this as it goes forward. You know, when you get ready to roll out the next one, you will get in touch with me, right?
You betcha, John. You won't be able to get rid of me. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Have a great show tonight, Jeff. Take care.
Take care, John. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. It is 10:32. Yeah, I'll link this right now to my Facebook page, and you'll be able to go there, facebook.com/HinesShow, HinesShow. And as always, thanks for liking my page. I appreciate that. But it's a chance for you to take a look at this. And if you click on some of these individual things that come up at the website, you can learn a little bit more about them, but the book goes far more in depth than all of that. So check it out for yourself. We'll be right back after this on WCCO.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Hey, good morning. Taking a look at a money situation that is very fascinating. How financial turmoil half a world away is melting Minnesota's iron country. That's the title of an article from Elon Mui, who writes as a financial reporter for the Washington Post. Joins me this morning to talk a little bit about this article from just a couple of days ago. Good morning, Elon. Thank you for your time here on WCCO. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate this very much. Talk to me a little bit about where you started digging into this story and how you came into this story that starts, as you say, half a world away and ends in Iron Junction, Minnesota.
Yeah, so, you know, I cover the economy here in the U.S. and globally as well, and I was thinking about the ways in which, you know, you hear so many people talk about fears of a global slowdown. Today, stock market, the last I checked, the Dow was down more than 300 points. Fears of China slowing down. What does that mean? What does that mean for the U.S.? A lot of people are starting to talk about the possibility of another recession even here in the United States, driven by these fears of turmoil overseas. And so I wanted to try to understand, what does that mean on a everyday level? What does that mean for workers? What does that mean for families? And one area of the country that I found that has been impacted by what's happening overseas in China is in Minnesota, is the Iron Range. And that's because they produce iron ore. A significant portion of the nation's iron ore comes from Minnesota's Iron Range. And they've really been hit by some of the broader global dynamics that are affecting the economy right now. So the price of natural resources, the price of iron ore has fallen dramatically. You know, back in, 20 years ago, it was about $14 a ton. It jumped to $200 a ton in the 2000s when China was on its building boom. Now it's fallen back down to about $40 a ton. And so that's impacted the price that, workers and miners in Minnesota's iron country can charge for the mineral that they are getting out of the ground. But it's also a story about China's overproduction as well. The price of steel has dropped dramatically. And, of course, iron is one of the chief components in steel. And so you're finding that as the price of steel plummets, that steel factories and steel mills aren't needing as much iron ore as they used to before. You're finding that more cheap imported steel is being used in the U.S., and that lowers the demand for Minnesota iron ore. So really, the northern part of Minnesota has been hit by a number of factors, and all of them, as I talk to the miners, that feel sort of outside of their control, and that makes it really scary for people who depend on this industry for their livelihoods.
You know, my guest, Ilan Mui, who wrote just a really comprehensive article here on just that reach, you know, and I think he referred to it at one point as the Chinese tsunami hitting. You know, a lot of the blame people quickly go to, well, it's because the Chinese are dumping cheap steel on the American market. But the problem is actually much greater than that, correct?
It's really sort of two parts, you know. So there is the problem, you know, the steel mills will definitely cite, you know, the problem of Chinese dumping, which they say is illegal Chinese dumping of steel. But, you know, the reality is that the part of the problem is that steel prices are so low, and that's a factor of oversupply, both from Chinese production, but also the fact that the global economy overall is weakening. And that's causing the price of natural resources and some of the materials made from them, like steel, across the world to fall. You know, you're seeing miners in Zambia who mine copper. They are also getting hit in this sort of new world order of the global economy. Brazil is in recession. So, you know, there are a number of sort of headwinds that are affecting the world and affecting countries all over the place. You know, here in America, even though the economy isn't great, we felt relatively insulated from a lot of those factors. But there are pockets of the country that are being hit, that already feel like they are in recession. You know, when I did some research for the story, I found that the unemployment rate in some of the counties that are at the heart of the hiring range have risen to 8%. You know, the national unemployment rate is less than 5%.
Right.
You can really see that many of these areas are struggling.
We talk about this when the numbers come out here for Minnesota, Ilan, because the numbers in Minnesota are lower than they are nationally. However, you see those pockets, exactly what you're talking about. I think one of the miners you spoke to, did you have a chance to get up and to visit in that area? Or
I did. You know, it was negative 37 when I went, with the wind chill factored in. I think the high was something like negative 2. So, you know, I was out there in the Minnesota snow.
Yeah, indeed you were. Interesting story, because you spoke with Dan Hill, who has been laid off for a number of months now. I think the term he used is, I think he said at one point, "We're wounded and you can't stitch us up." I thought it was interesting, too. Key part of the story is how those prices rose for almost 10 years' time, from $13 a ton to nearly $200 a ton, as you pointed out. And those had to be absolute boom times for the Iron Range.
Yeah, it was a great time, and it was a time when many of the mines were hiring people. There was talk of new investment. There was a new mine that was even that is actually even underway right now, being built, not just a mine, but a steel mill attached to the mine, sort of the dream of the Iron Range to have not just one industry, but two that could prop it up. But those plans are on hold for the steel mill right now because the price of steel is so low. So, you know, there had been a time when you saw prices that were so high and people could make you know, good amount of money on it, that there was new investment, sort of new business that they were looking to target. And a lot of that was driven by China, by China's building boom. You know, now that that's turned around, and it's turned around extremely quickly, as we can see from the fact that markets are going so crazy so quickly, that has sort of caught people off guard, caught a lot of industries off guard, caught a lot of companies off guard, and certainly caught the workers off guard.
Yeah, and we're seeing the same thing happen. We were just having a conversation earlier with a business professor from St. Ben's, St. John's in Collegeville, Minnesota. We were talking about the markets this morning and the fact that it is, you know, it's not just the economy, though, in China and what's happening there, but the oil is having a big factor in all of this as well. And the same thing that you're seeing on the range is happening in northern North Dakota, Ilan, because of the glut of oil that is now in the market, with taking prices so low, and the boom that had been there is now, you know, turning into at least a buster for sure. In the meantime, a real stoppage or slowing of the process.
That's right. And, you know, the direct effect of the global slowdown of China's slowdown on the U.S. is pretty small when you look at U.S. exports to China. Certainly not a major part of our economy. It's a very small sliver. However, when you look at the indirect effects, especially when you look at pockets across the country, that's where you can really see how this can sort of seep out, you know, beyond the obvious channels that you would expect. So, for example, in Illinois, Caterpillar, obviously a big manufacturer of heavy-duty machinery and equipment, you know, they are having layoffs across their company, you know, centered in Illinois, but really across the world, because there's less demand for their machines, and people aren't mining, people aren't building, as much, et cetera. And so, you again, one of those indirect effects of China's slowdown that can be surprising in its force and surprising in its speed.
Well, Ilan, you wrote a really great article, and again, taking it from all the way from there and coming up to the Iron Range and being a part of that that community up there. Again, it's at Washington Post. Financial turmoil half a world away is melting Minnesota's iron country. Ilan, thanks for joining me this morning. I look forward to chatting with you again.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Take care. It is right now 10:48. We'll do this timeout and then come back and get you all the latest, the four things you need to know, and just some general fun conversation with Kim Johnson from WCCO Television. Good morning and happy Inventor's Day to our good friend Kim Johnson from WCCO Television. Kim, good morning.
Good morning. Is it really Inventor's Day?
It's the anniversary of the birth of Thomas Edison.
Okay.
So we just had a conversation in the last half hour with Jeff Johnson, who is the first of a series of books rolling out today, as a matter of fact. Northeast Minneapolis is going to have a celebration in the Solar Arts Building. It's called MN Invents, and it is everything from Twister to the first Skyway, the indoor shopping center at Southdale.
The Post-it note.
The Post-it note. Oh, he said 3M could do an entire book just on tape.
Oh, you could.
Yeah.
You could, just with all the inventions that 3M is behind that many we don't even, most people don't even realize.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
just
it's crazy.
And so many things, so many things from the University of Minnesota, but then also some very, you know, accomplished inventors on their own. Guys like Ren Geyer, who invented a number of things, including he was one of the inventors who was along on the Twister game. But, yeah, I'm trying to think of just what all else is there. I put a link on my Facebook page, big image in the middle. The picture was too big for the space, but never mind. If you click on the image, it'll take you to MN Invents. But Ren Geyer invented, what was it he invented? Just a number of things. Nerf.
Okay.
All things Nerf. The pop-up toaster was invented here.
Wow. So I can thank him for a lot of fun in my childhood.
Yes.
And maybe a little bit still in my adulthood.
Yeah, there you go. And it also, how about this? How about handles on paper shopping bags, grocery bags?
Ooh.
Another great one.
Go figure.
Yes.
I have often thought about that. I don't know if you've ever had a heavy load in a paper bag coming out of the grocery store. And those handles, somehow, there's some genius engineering going on behind them, because the fact that those two little handles can carry my heavy load, it's amazing.
Sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes they get away from you.
Every once in a while.
That's why I go for the old double bag routine.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes.
Can't go wrong with that.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about four things you need to know. Let's start with that story that you guys have been reporting all morning, since early this morning, a tragic story.
Yeah, this is out of Fargo, North Dakota. A police officer was shot during a standoff, and the latest that we've heard from the police chief is that he is not expected to survive. This is Officer Jason Moser, who is, I believe, 33 years old. He is a six-year veteran of the department there. Apparently, there was a man involved in a domestic violence situation, and when Officer Moser went into the home that he had barricaded himself inside, this man opened fire and hit Officer Moser. And it's a standoff, though, that went on for 11 hours, and we had been reporting all morning long, and it did come to an end after police went inside and found that the suspect had shot himself. So absolutely heartbreaking news for that community of Fargo. They have not had an officer death in quite some time. The Fargo Forum reports that if Moser does pass, he will be the first officer to be killed in a shooting since 1882. So it's just not something that goes on often up there and is devastating for the community.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's also one of these stories that then will receive national attention because of the number of law enforcement that comes from across the country to support the family of the officer, the friends and family, the police force that has been left behind. So the survivors there. That's a tough time. Hey, another story that is the four things you need to know because it's tonight. Bernie Sanders, who was yesterday referred to as Bernie Sandwiches, and Hillary Clinton.
Another debate. This is their sixth debate. They had one, the last one about a week ago today, I think. And this is this first time that we're going to see them square off after the New Hampshire primary. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see the jabs that Hillary Clinton is going to take at Bernie Sanders because, you know, Bernie Sanders won by 20 points in New Hampshire. So, the two right now are fighting over women voters, minority voters, and young voters. And Bernie Sanders seems to be coming out on top in all those categories right now. So this is a debate that's going to be taking place in Milwaukee, the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. It's at 8 p.m. tonight. You can see it on CNN or on PBS. And
we should mention this, too, that on CBS this coming Saturday night, John Dickerson will be hosting the Republican presidential primary debate. That'll be the latest one. Oh, gosh, I'm running off the clock. We will see you at noon today, Kim. Thank you.
Fabulous. Thanks.